Hello, everyone, and welcome back to part two of our interview with author and writing expert, Dr. Henriette Clauser. Dr. Clauser, in the first part of our interview, we've been talking about the importance of writing as it relates to growing your business. One of the things you mentioned in part one was about stacking your goals. Can you go into more detail on that? That sounded fascinating.
Well, I tell you, John, stacking goals has to do with building on doing something well. And I actually started thinking about this a long time ago when I had a friend who wanted to ride a unicycle. And so what happened was that Edna decided that she was going to really work hard on that until she learned to ride a unicycle. And so she did. And that was kind of fun, but it was isolated. And then her mother started using that as an analogy for anything that Edna wanted to do. So, for example, Edna would say, I just can't do French. And her mother would say, well, a girl who could ride a unicycle could study French. Oh, okay. You know, a girl who could. So it became a kind of a benchmark for her, and it became almost a joke, you know. And I know we even, as a country, use what is actually a false analogy when we say a country that could put a man on the moon could help global hunger. Mm-hmm. Well, that's actually a false analogy because we're comparing two activities that are maybe alike in trivial ways, but not in the most significant way. But, oh well, the fact is that as a country, we have been motivated time and again to do other great things because of that one small step mm-hmm. for man. A country that could put a man on the moon could, and then we figure out a way to do it.
Right.
See, and I was actually kind of smiling to myself when I read on your blog, John, about how you didn't like to play baseball. Because when you were a kid, you weren't very good at it. And a few years ago, I met a man who became a major influence on my life, and his name was Mark Cicito. He was one of the nine people, by the way, whom I did not even know when I started to write the proposal for Write Down, Make It Happen. But Mark is an opera singer and now a novelist and playwright. And when Mark was a little kid, he didn't play baseball very well. And in fact, he had a line, he's very funny too, and he said that the kid in the cast got chosen before I did when I had to pick who would play on the team. Well, Mark was here in Seattle singing in the opera Turandot, and he was worried about his voice. So what he did is he signed up for a batting cage, and he learned how to bat. And the more he did that, the more he got better at singing.
Oh.
Because it was stacking. Mm-hmm. You see, what happened is that he said that he was so self-conscious as an athlete, and then he decided what he was going to do something about that today, and his confidence kept growing.
I see.
And by the third time that he was into the cage, he said, I knew I could sing better.
Oh, that's fantastic. Henriette, let me go back, because I want to ask you a question. I get owners, and myself sometimes, where I say, I have nothing to write about. What do you say to someone who says that?
Well, it's going to go back to that old hair of the dog that bit you. Write about not having anything to write about.
Oh, okay.
And what will happen is you let the pen tell you. The thing is, the reason you think you don't have anything to write about is because you think that you have to already know what you want. And that's why the subtitle of my book is called Knowing What You Want and Getting It.
I see.
Because the first part of knowing what you want is writing it down.
And so when you write, does it have to be actual writing by hand on paper, or can you use a computer or an iPad or an electronic device like a PDA?
I think there are certain arguments for sometimes writing it out by hand, and part of that has to do with the brain-mind connection. most of us learn to write in the first grade or second grade by hand, not electronically. And because of that, there are certain anxieties or fears that are connected with writing by hand that you can overcome by actually writing things out by hand. And yet today, the use of electronic devices is so prevalent and easy for most people that I think that in terms of your goal setting, it really doesn't matter. It you use what works for you, or do the way my son Peter, he does both. But here's what I would suggest. I would suggest that if you want to only use electronic devices, then think about some of the more right-brained kinds of things that you could incorporate into that. You know, play around with different fonts, or surround yourself with music, put on your favorite CDs in the background, or incorporate colors, integrate movements. You know, my son James is a graphic designer, and he spends a lot of time in front of the monitor, but at least four times a day he gets up and shoots a few hoops because he's got a basketball hoop right there in his office, and then he goes back to the computer. So get up, walk around, get to a different environment. I think that being outdoors to write, getting near water to write, for every hour on the computer, spend an equal amount of time doing something more traditional, even using chopsticks or playing a musical instrument.
Okay, all right. And so when we talk about not having anything to write about, and the word I read in your book is writer's block. Is there such a thing as a writer's block, and how do you get through it?
The writer's block is the critic I referred to in the first half of our interview, John. Mm-hmm. The writer's block is the either I can't do this, or you're stupid and you can't do this, you know. Mm-hmm. And by the way, writers aren't the only ones who have writer's block. Athletes and musicians and anybody who's doing anything with their lives has a block of some kind. I call it the wall. And so what you need to recognize is that when you hit that wall or you hit that block, it's not an end point. Years ago in Calgary at the Ironman triathlon, they had people had the T-shirts. It said, walls are doors.
Nope.
What does that mean, walls are doors? Well, that means that when you hit the wall or the block, you go, oh, I just hit the wall. And in the case of writing, keep on writing. In the case of running, keep on running. In the case of mountain climbing, keep on climbing. You don't say, oh, I've hit the wall, I better stop. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us, interestingly enough, I know a lot of business people today are very involved in athletics as well, you know, maybe working at the gym or running marathons, doing cycling, doing triathlons. And this helps keep their energy going. It's very vital and important. So there's a lot of tricks that they've learned for those kind of endurance sports. Well, transfer that over to your writing.
Interesting. Now, you talked about getting through that writer's block with a process you called rapid writing. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Oh, absolutely. It's key, absolutely key. You know, it's funny because I've written five books now, and I look, and some of the concepts come up in every book, and one of them is rapid writing, because rapid writing means writing it down fast, writing it down without worrying about grammar, without worrying about spelling, without editing it, incorporating the static. And just like I say, when you hit the wall, keep on climbing. When you hit the wall in writing, keep on writing. I often tell people to literally set a clock or a timer for 10 minutes and don't stop writing till the 10 minutes is up. And at 8.5 minutes, you'll hit the wall. At 8.5 minutes, you'll run out of ideas. Keep on writing. You write for the full 10 minutes.
Even if you run out of ideas.
Cover the page, cover the page. Mm-hmm. My page, cover it. Go to the next page. I'm not going to stop writing until I finish the end of this page or the end of this document.
Fantastic. And another term that you had in the book that I'd like you to talk about is the term called polishing coconuts.
Polishing coconuts. Yeah, that is actually one of my favorite things to do. And it goes back to the story of, you remember the 100 monkeys?
Mm-hmm.
And the story of the 100 monkeys was that there were some monkeys who were on an island off the mainland of Japan, and they started, actually it turns out later, that they were washing sand off yams. And they washed the yams before they ate them. And then the other younger monkeys saw the older monkeys doing this, and they followed. The theory was that as soon as 100 monkeys on this remote island started doing this, something happened on another island where the monkeys picked up the yams and started washing the sand off the yams.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to do with, you know, quantum mechanics, quantum thinking. But the idea of it is that when you are doing something on this little remote island, somebody else can pick up the signal.
Ah.
And I call it polishing coconuts because it sounds better than rubbing sand off yams. And for years, I always thought the story of the 100 monkeys was polishing coconuts. But what happens is that when you start to do something toward your goal, that you're actually, another way of expressing it is to call stirring the pot. So what you're doing is you're stirring the pot up, and you're sending out a signal. It's as though, you know, for one way of putting it is that you're putting up a sign saying, I'm open for business. Or another way of saying it is that you are sending out a signal to the universe saying, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready. And again, it goes back to that idea about, well, if not that, then what? Because sometimes you may be doing something that you think is going to work, and then it doesn't work. But that doesn't mean that it isn't working someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, when my sons, James and Peter, they own a graphic design firm. And so what happens is that they began to realize that their activities, often indirectly, would help generate business in an untapped source. And they love this expression, polishing coconuts, and they often say, hey, we're polishing coconuts, you know, meaning that when activity in one area generates movement in another. So the word is getting out.
I see.
So when James and Peter wanted to generate more business, they put together a newsletter, and then they started getting phone calls, but the phone calls weren't from the people they sent the newsletter to. They were from people that weren't on their mailing list. So they were putting the energy out there, and then the phone started ringing from new contacts. And they wrote down the goal, we want more exposure to get our name before the public. So they started setting up booths at trade shows and sent out notices to area companies. And a lot of those efforts and expenditures didn't pan out. But what was totally unexpected and they couldn't have predicted was that they get a call from the Wall Street Journal doing an article on successful small businesses. And it turned out they had been given, the Wall Street Journal got their name from a local Kinko's shop because they were going to Kinko's so often to get all these other things done. So that gave them all kinds of national exposure even.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I call it stirring the pot.
Yeah.
But it also, for those listeners who know about Carl Jung's work in synchronicity, that's what polishing coconuts is all about. It's creating a kind of Jungian synchronicity or convergence of meaningful events.
I see.
So you write down to be clear that it's possible, and then the activity over here might in fact generate movement over there, because you never know when your signal is going to be picked up on another island.
I see. And for owners who, when we're talking about getting signals, what about owners who get these creative thoughts all the time, night, day, middle of the night? How do you teach them or recommend, Dr. Clauser, for them to capture those?
Yeah, that's where your tidbit journal comes in.
Okay.
Because I actually happen to be that kind of eclectic thinker myself. You know, for one thing, going back and overlapping to what we said before about the brain, the left side of the brain being the more critical side of the brain and the right side of the brain being the more creative side,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times you get your best ideas when the left side of the brain is quiet. See, connecting the two hemispheres is a bundle of cable of nerves called the corpus callosum, and you have ideas going back and forth across the corpus callosum all the time, but often they're blocked because the left side of the brain is saying, oh, that's a stupid idea. Well, sometimes when we're doing something that is repetitive, wordless, and familiar, such as taking a shower, driving to work, riding on the bus, you know what Julian James calls the three B's, the bed, the bath, and the bus. When we're doing those kinds of activities, then the mind is at rest. Or if you're running, jogging, cycling, exercising, and your mind is not consciously thinking about that problem, then the critic is asleep. And then all of a sudden, the right side of the brain sends an idea across the corpus callosum, and then you capture it, you write it down. And don't say, I'll remember that in the morning. Keep the little book by your bedside. Have a little book. I always keep a little book, and it's really fun to see when I'm driving around town with my sons that they've got the little memo book right in there, right there in front of them in the car.
I see. One idea I loved in your book was the idea of blank screens and that approach to writing. Can you talk about that and why that works?
The reason that works is because it keeps the critic at bay.
Okay.
When we were using a program, a word program or a computer, I mean, a lot of people now compose on the screen right in front of them. But what happens is that the freedom of that has now become something that can actually in itself cause anxiety because of the ability that we have to delete paragraphs, move paragraphs around. Let's say that you have a spell check or even grammar check or something on your computer. Well, then it's going to underline the word in red or it's going to underline it in green if the computer thinks that that's not a good phrase. And there's a huge temptation then to go back and tinker with that, to change that, to edit while you're writing. And remember that I said that the key way to write naturally, fluently, and conversationally, one human being talking to another human being, is by separating the writing from the editing. So just blank out the screen.
Hmm.
And then what will happen is then you can go back after 10 minutes, after 5 minutes, and read what you wrote.
So you just type away.
Screen.
Just type away with the monitor off or with the screen off.
Yeah. I tell you, John, it's funny because I've had people take a full weekend workshop. They might be with me for 15 hours, and then they'll write and tell me that the one thing that made a difference for them. The major difference, people say, I've been working on this project for 3 months and I just couldn't get it going. And then I turned off the screen and I wrote it in 3 days.
Amazing. Amazing. Henriette, probably the most common tendency of all the owners who are going to be listening to this is they all, if I talk to them, they will all tell me, we are too busy to do one more thing. What kind of advice can you give them, these busy, super busy owners, about writing?
And make it a priority.
Okay.
It's something that I think I mentioned to you before when you were talking about a dollar a day, just a few minutes a day. One of the expressions that I quote in my first book, Writing on Both Sides of the Brain, goes back to ancient times and Pliny, and in Latin it was nulla dies sine linea, never a day without a line. One of the reasons why people are afraid to write every day is that they think they're going to have to take a block of time. But what if I told you write one sentence every day? Write one line every day. Never a day without a line. Nulla dies sine linea. I actually brought my kids up with that standard. And they did it. They wrote every single day. And what happens, John, is kind of fun, because if you write every day, first of all, by writing even one sentence, you've already launched the idea in your brain. So then you're thinking about it all day on the back burner, like a great stew pot of a pot au feu on the back burner, you know, and then maybe during the day you're throwing in a couple of carrots and bones and whatever else, so that the next day when you write one sentence, then it's going to build on everything that you've been thinking about for 24 hours.
I see.
The other thing is that when you write once a day, if it's something that's really important, you'll find that the time will open up, and all of a sudden, like a runaway train, you keep on writing, because just by writing that down, you got over the fear of it. So write something every day, even if it's only one sentence.
I see. Okay. I think that is very doable. That's like the dollar a day that we talked about.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Henriette, this has just been a fascinating hour that we've spoken together, and as you said at the beginning, you know, I've wanted to interview you for years, and there have been times when you've been traveling, and I've just kept after you, and finally we got to do this.
Well, good for you, John. I really admire your persistence, and I think that is one of the key things to getting your goals.
Yeah. Well,
so I hope if you had it written down, interview Henriette Ann Clauser, that now you can check that off as a goal that you have achieved and can use for stacking.
Good, great idea. Henriette, tell our audience how they can learn more about you, learn more about your workshops, get your books that have been so impactful for me. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, thanks, John. I have a webpage. And I'm working on updating it right now, but all the key information is on there. And it's just my name, www.henriettecklauser.com, Henriettecklauser. You can order the books directly from the webpage. And the other thing is that you can write to me at henriette@henriettecklauser.com. And I will tell you that I receive many letters, and I read every letter, but I'm not always able to respond directly to the letter. But I do want people to know that if they write to me, that I will read the letter.
Fantastic. Everyone, I have had the privilege for the last two interviews that we've done here with speaking with Dr. Henriette Ann Clauser, and I can heartily recommend her books. Let me go over them again for you. Her first one, Writing on Both Sides of the Brain, Put Your Heart on Paper, Write It Down, Make It Happen, and her book, With Pen in Hand, The Healing Power of Writing. I can't recommend these enough. I think they could be integral to all of your business success. And Henriette, thank you again for coming on with me and taking time and spending so much of time this morning sharing your valuable expertise with our owners.
Thank you, John. It's been a delight.